Welcome to the deep dive. Imagine if you could sort of peek behind the curtain at the fundamental equations governing waves.
Everything from light and optical fibers.
Right, exactly. Or, you know, massive ocean waves, even down to the quantum level, how particles behave.
It's a huge race.
It really is. And today we're diving into just that, the world of nonlinear Schrodinger equations. NLS for short.
Yeah, NLS, they're absolutely central in physics and engineering too. But the really fascinating part, the challenge, is their long-term behavior.
Right. It can get incredibly complex, even unpredictable.
That's it. So the big questions mathematicians are wrestling with are things like, do solutions even always exist? Do they stay, you know, stable and well-behaved?
Or do they just crash dramatically, that blow-up phenomenon we hear about?
Precisely. Or maybe they eventually settle down into some kind of predictable pattern or just fade away.
So our mission today is to unpack these really deep questions for you. We're pulling out the key insights, the surprising bits from some cutting-edge math research.
Yeah, we're leaning heavily on a pretty significant publication looking at global solutions, work involving John Bourgain's insights.
Our goal is to help you get up to speed on this, well, pretty intricate field, but without getting totally lost in the super dense math, we're looking for those aha moments.
Those moments where it clicks.
Exactly.
Okay, so let's start with the basics. What are NLS equations? Fundamentally, they're mathematical models, right? Tools for describing how waves move and change.
Rule books for waves, essentially.
Kind of, yeah. The most famous cousin is the Schrodinger equation itself. You know, the cornerstone of quantum mechanics, telling us how quantum systems evolve.
So if they're that fundamental, why are they so tricky to fully understand? You mentioned challenges.
A lot of it boils down to this concept mathematicians call well-posedness.
Okay, well-posedness. Sounds technical.
It is a bit, but the idea is simple enough. For a model to be, well, useful for describing the real world, it needs to pass this test. Three things, basically. A solution has to exist. It has to be unique, only one answer for the same starting point. And this is key for us.
Yeah.
It has to behave predictably.
Predictably? How?
Meaning, if you tweak the initial conditions just a tiny bit, the outcome should only change a tiny bit too. Think of it like a stable lab experiment.
Right. You nudge it slightly, you expect a slight difference in the result, not complete chaos.
Exactly. You don't want tiny changes leading to wildly different futures. That makes prediction impossible.
Makes sense.
And within this idea, we often talk about local versus global solutions.
Local means just for a short time.
Yeah, a solution that we know exists and behaves well, but maybe only for a limited time interval. Global means it works for all time.
And I guess the global ones are harder to guarantee.
Oh, much harder. Especially when you start with, say, a really large or complex wave. We're pretty good with short-term behavior or small waves, but the long-term fate, that's often the big mystery.
But it's interesting. The research mentions these equations often have built-in safeguards, conservation laws.
That's a great way to put it. Yeah. Inherent properties that don't change as the wave evolves. They give us crucial clues.
Like what?
Two main ones pop up constantly. The Hamiltonian, think of that as the total energy of the system. And the L2 norm.
L2 norm.
You can sort of visualize it as the total mass, or in quantum mechanics, the total probability associated with the wave. It measures the overall size, in a way.
And these stay constant.
They do.
Yeah.
These conserved quantities are like anchors. Even if the wave itself is doing complicated things, these values remain fixed. Sometimes just knowing the Hamiltonian is conserved is enough to prove a solution can't blow up.
Wow. Okay. So they provide some stability, some predictability.
Exactly. They're crucial handles on the problem. Now, another key concept is this idea of critical thresholds. It comes from something called scaling invariance.
Scaling invariance, like zooming in or out?
Pretty much. Imagine you have a wave solution. Scaling invariance means you can stretch or shrink it in both space and time according to certain rules, and the result is still a valid solution. But it might live in a different mathematical space, have different properties. This scaling helps mathematicians classify the equation based on certain exponents that appear in the nonlinear term.
And that leads to these critical or subcritical labels.
Right. And these aren't just academic labels. They have real consequences for the wave's behavior. They tell you whether the solution is more likely to be stable long term, or if it's prone to dramatic changes, like blow up.
So it's like a dividing line. One side tends towards stability, the other towards potential chaos.
That's a good analogy, yeah. The exponent acts as a critical threshold. If you're right at the critical value, it often means the balance between the wave spreading out and focusing in is really delicate.
Okay, let's talk about that drama then, blow up. You said it's where the wave's magnitude becomes infinite.
In finite time, yes. It's a really striking scenario. Imagine an ocean wave just building and building until, poof, its height is theoretically infinite at a point.
Mm.
Or a laser beam focusing so intensely its power becomes infinite.
That sounds physically impossible, but mathematically.
Mathematically, it's a possibility the equations allow for under certain conditions. And understanding when and how it happens is a major area of research.
And the equation itself gives clues, right? You mentioned a plus or minus sign.
Yeah, in that key nonlinear term, up two. If there's a plus sign in front, we call it the focusing case. The nonlinearity tends to pull the wave together to self-concentrate.
Making bloat more likely?
Generally, yes. If you start with enough energy or the right kind of initial shape, a focusing NLS solution might blow up. There's even a tool, Glassy's virial inequality, shows something remarkable.
Yep.
If the Hamiltonian, the energy, is negative in the focusing case, blow up has to happen. There's no escape.
Wow, negative energy guarantees self-destruction. That's pretty definitive.
It is. Now, if there's a minus sign instead, that's the defocusing case.
And that pushes the wave apart.
Exactly. That term actively works against concentration. So in the defocusing case, solutions are generally much better behaved. They're more likely to exist globally to spread out over time.
So minus sign is usually safer, but blow up, when it does happen, can still be weird, right?
You mentioned work by Merle.
Oh, absolutely. Fascinating results there. For instance, take the L2 critical NLS equation. If a solution is going to blow up, then just before it does, essentially all of its mass, its L2 norm, gets concentrated into an incredibly tiny region of space. Like the entire wave collapses into a single point.
All of it.
All of its L2 mass, yeah.
Mm.
It's an extreme concentration of energy.
That's hard to picture.
It is. And it gets wilder. Mathematicians, including Merle, have shown you can actually construct solutions that blow up at multiple points simultaneously.
Wait, like one wave crashing in several different spots at the exact same instant?
Precisely. Theorem 4 in the source material talks about this. It's not just one single point of failure.
Mind blown. Okay.
And then there's Theorem 5 talking about partial blow up.
Partial. Meaning not all the wave has to participate in the catastrophe. Part of the solution can undergo this blow up singularity, but another part might just sail right through, continuing smoothly after the blow-up time.
So a piece of the wave self-destructs, but the rest carries on like nothing happened.
Sort of, yeah. It's incredibly complex behavior.
Yeah.
Shows the blow-up can be a localized event.
Okay, so after all that drama, what's the ideal outcome? The mathematical happy ending.
That would be global well-posedness and scattering.
Right. Global well-posedness exists forever, behaves nicely. We covered that. What's scattering?
Scattering is this beautiful idea that as time goes towards infinity, the complicated interacting solution starts to look more and more like a simple free wave.
Like the solution to a linear equation, without the tricky non-linear part.
Exactly. It's as if all the complex interactions just dissipate, and the wave spreads out freely. It finds peace, in a way.
Is that expected to happen often?
It's the expected behavior in many defocusing cases, especially subcritical ones. But proving it, especially when you start with large initial waves, is a major, major challenge.
Small waves are easier.
Much easier, relatively speaking. The interactions are weaker. But proving global existence and scattering for large data, that's where the really deep mathematical tools come in.
And there have been breakthroughs.
Yes. Yes. The source highlights a really significant one for the 3D H1 critical defocusing NLS.
Okay, that's a mouthful.
Yes. It's a specific but important case. If you start with initial data that's radial, meaning perfectly spherically symmetric.
Like a perfect ripple spreading out.
Kind of, yeah. For that specific case, they managed to prove global well-posedness and scattering. A huge result. But for general, non-radial data in that same setting. Still an open problem.
Still frontiers to explore. So what are these deep tools they use?
A cornerstone is a set of tools called Strichart's inequalities. Yeah, they are absolutely fundamental. They essentially provide estimates, mathematical bounds on how solutions spread out or decay over time and space.
Mm-hmm.
They let you control the size of the solution in different ways.
Like guardrails for the wave's behavior.
That's a good way to think about it. They are crucial for proving well-posedness, for showing solutions don't grow too large too quickly.
Okay. And related to that is Fourier restriction theory.
Exactly. Fourier analysis, you know, breaks down functions into frequencies like a prism with light. Restriction theory asks how these frequency components behave when you restrict them, when you look at them only on specific geometric surfaces.
Like spheres or paraboloids, the source mentioned.
Right, shapes that are naturally related to the solutions of wave equations or Schrodinger equations.
And this connects somehow to Kakia sets. This sounds like a sharp left turn.
It really does. It's one of those amazing, unexpected connections in math. So if a Kakia set, it's a weird geometric object. Imagine a set in, say, a 2D plane. It's compact. And it has the bizarre property that it contains a line segment pointing in every single possible direction.
Every direction. How can it do that without being huge, like a solid disk?
That's the intuition, but it's wrong. Mathematicians proved that in 2D, Kakia sets can have zero area, zero measure. They can be incredibly thin and spindly, yet still manage to point everywhere.
That is genuinely mind-bending. Zero area, but points every way.
It messes with your geometric intuition, for sure. And the famous Kakia conjecture is about what happens in higher dimensions. It asks if these sets, while maybe having zero volume, must still have a certain largeness in terms of their dimension.
Okay, weird geometry. What's the NLS connection?
Here it is. The source states that a major conjecture in Fourier analysis, the restriction conjecture, which is intimately linked to those Strichart's inequalities we need for NLS, actually implies the Kakia conjecture.
Whoa. So proving something about how waves behave could solve this purely geometric puzzle.
That's the link. It's absolutely stunning. Progress on understanding wave equations is tied to progress on understanding these strange geometric sets. It shows how deep the connections run.
Incredible. Okay, beyond these core ideas, what are the frontiers now? What are people working on?
Well, one big area is the behavior of higher Sobolev norms.
Higher Sobolev norms, meaning?
Think of them as measuring not just the size or energy of the wave, but its smoothness or maybe its roughness. How wiggly or complicated is the wave's shape?
Ah, okay. So even if a wave exists forever, does it get increasingly complex, more jagged?
That's the question. In wide open spaces, the expectation is generally, no, these norms stay bounded. The wave might spread out, but it doesn't become infinitely complex locally.
But what about in confined spaces, like a wave in a box?
Ah, that's different. There, the wave can't just disperse forever. It bounces around.
Yeah.
And there's a conjecture linked to ideas of weak turbulence that maybe in these bounded domains, the higher Sobolev norms can grow indefinitely. The solution becomes more and more complex over time.
Slowly becoming more chaotic.
In a sense, yeah. A slow growth of complexity. And the source gives this really cool example, a coupled NLS system.
Two NLS equations interacting.
Right. They constructed a specific setup where one part of the system essentially forces the other part's higher Sobolev norms to grow without any bound, to become infinitely complex over time.
So one wave can kind of pump complexity into the other?
That's the idea. It shows how interactions can drive this growth in complexity, even when things don't blow up in the traditional sense. It demonstrates the limits of stability.
Fascinating. Any other frontiers?
Definitely. There are derivative NLS equations. These are even nastier beasts, where the nonlinearity involves derivatives of the wave function itself.
Making the maths even harder.
Significantly harder. For most of those, our understanding is still quite limited, often just short-time results, or only for very small initial data. Lots of open questions there.
So despite huge progress, like that 3D radio result,
right,
there are still many fundamental questions about NLS that are unanswered, pushing the boundaries of what we know.
Absolutely. Even things like, what happens if you start at defocusing NLS with really rough, non-smooth data? Does it still exist globally? Mm. Still active research. It's a field that keeps on giving, mathematically speaking.
What a fantastic tour. We've really taken a deep dive today into the nonlinear Schrodinger equations, explored that delicate balance, haven't we, between stability and the dramatic blow up.
Yeah, and we saw how mathematicians use these really sophisticated tools, Strichart's inequalities, Fourier analysis, and how they surprisingly connect to things like Kakia sets.
All just to understand how these waves behave.
It really highlights how these seemingly abstract mathematical problems are, well, deeply connected to understanding the real world, the fundamental behavior of waves, of particles shaping our universe.
From light and cables to quantum mechanics.
Exactly. It's not just math for math's sake.
It definitely leaves you thinking, what other completely unexpected connections are out there, hidden between different areas of mathematics, that might just hold the key to unlocking some of the universe's biggest remaining mysteries?
Hmm. That's the provocative thought, isn't it? What bridges are we missing?